welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Friday, February 19th, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. The headline is Iowa GOP Advances Elections Bill by Benjamin Fisher. If passed into law, early and mail-in voting would be curtailed. Republicans on Thursday passed bills that would make sweeping changes to Iowa elections out of state House of Representatives and Senate committees, drawing objections from Democrats and voting rights advocates. The near-identical bills would cut both the periods for in-person and mail-in early voting from 29 to 18 days. It had been 40 days before the Republican-controlled legislature reduced it 4 years ago. The bills also would allow voters to request absentee ballots starting 70 days before an election, a 50-day reduction from the current 120 days. The proposals would bar counties from mailing absentee ballot applications to voters, tightly regulate how absentee ballots can be returned, and potentially reduce satellite early voting locations. Many Republicans have said the new bills are meant to shore up public confidence after President Donald Trump and his GOP allies, without evidence, criticized the 2020 presidential election as fraudulent. Those claims were turned away by dozens of courts and were made even as a group of election officials deemed the 2020 presidential election, quote, the most secure in American history, unquote. Iowa Democrats and voting rights advocates lambasted the bills. State Senator Pam Jockum, Democrat of Dubuque, who is on the Senate State Government Committee, spoke against the bill on the chamber floor Thursday. Quote, it is an attack on Iowa's democracy, and it is disgusting, she said. Last year, we had a record voter turnout, and the reason is because we made it more convenient and easier for Iowans to cast an early vote. There were no credible complaints about our election security. Not one. Not one. Unquote. Iowa Senator Kerry Kolker, Republican of Dyersville, also sits on the Senate State Government Committee and voted in favor of the bill. She said Iowans would still have many avenues to vote. Quote, this will limit voter remorse and hopefully the length of campaigning in the state and hopefully increase integrity and security, she said. No bill's perfect. We all probably would have written this differently, but this bill maintains the compliance with the law. It brings transparency and accountability to the entire process. Unquote. A record 1.7 million Iowa voters participated in the 2020 presidential election, equating to 76% turnout, and no major allegations of fraud have surfaced. Amid the pandemic, 1 million people voted absentee. Under the bills, each county would be limited to one ballot drop box, which would be under video surveillance. Counties would offer early voting during the 18-day period at their offices, but would no longer have authority to set up satellite voting locations in places such as libraries and college campuses. Specific locations would be allowed if 100 voters signed a petition requesting them. The bills declare that auditors would be required to follow guidance from Iowa's Secretary of State or be charged with felony election misconduct. The bills now are eligible for floor debate as early as next week. Among election officials in eastern Iowa, opposition to the legislation was bipartisan. Delaware County Auditor Carla Becker, a Republican, said she did not understand the motivation for the bills and noted the reduction of the early voting period 4 years ago. Quote, now they're really shortening it, she said. That is problematic for the voters. I'm not looking at us and the work we would have to do, although that will be significant. I'm looking at the voters' ability for access, unquote. Jenny Hillary, Dubuque County Deputy Commissioner of Elections, also worried about voter access with a shorter early voting window. She said many elderly, disabled, or otherwise immobile residents call in requesting an absentee ballot request form. If you call us because you don't have a printer at home, we cannot mail you a form with this, she said. They're trying to stop countywide mailings, but they're restricting all counties from getting these to their voters, unquote. Hillary also bemoaned language in the bills that would keep auditors' offices from establishing satellite polling places without a petition. Quote, "We went out to Worthington, New Vienna, Holy Cross on a weekday or after church," she said. "In Holy Cross, we had 100 people vote in 2020 at that satellite. Worthington had 92. New Vienna did 66. That's not saying they couldn't get a petition together necessarily, but it takes any discretion from us away to help them," unquote. Dubuque County Auditor Kevin Dragoto, a Democrat, called the legislation backward in 18 ways. In particular, he pointed to the ballot request form mailing prohibition. Quote, "If our Board of Supervisors, who are elected by the citizens of Dubuque County, allocate money for that, and I, an elected official, want to mail them out, how are we not speaking for the citizens of Dubuque County?" he asked. The Iowa State Association of County Auditors, which represents elections commissioners in all 99 counties and has a Republican president, warned that the bill would remove local decision-making and create longer lines at polling places on Election Day and at remaining early voting sites. The bill is also opposed by disability rights groups, American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa, AARP, League of Women Voters of Iowa, and labor unions. Republicans have the votes to pass the bill without Democratic support, and Republican Governor Kim Reynolds signaled Wednesday that she was open to reducing mail and early voting opportunities. Also from the front page, the headline is Council Sets Federal Legislative Priorities. Promoting economic and social equity is a stated goal, by John Cruz. Federal legislative priorities approved this week by Dubuque City Council members include support for an increased minimum wage and an end to minimum mandatory sentencing. The list of priorities includes a new section of items specifically tailored to promoting social and economic equity for residents. Quote, "Improving equity in the community has become a priority for the city," said City Human Rights Director Kelly Larson. "There was a lot of heightened awareness this year to have an equity component in our legislative priorities," unquote. The city's list, which will be distributed to federal legislators and agencies, also includes calls for additional COVID-19 relief. Quote, "Local governments have been hit hard," said former assistant manager Terry Goodman, who has volunteered to help compile the city's list of legislative priorities this year. "Funding for local governments helps address those negative economic impacts," unquote. The new equity section of the list includes calling for the federal minimum wage to be gradually raised to $12 per hour, striking mandatory minimum sentencing, expanding earned income and child tax credits, and placing restrictions on the use of criminal records to disqualify occupational licensure. The minimum wage already is being examined by federal officials, and President Joe Biden has said he supports raising the rate to $15 per hour. Congressional Budget Office officials have said that the move would reduce the number of people in poverty, but also would eradicate 1.4 million jobs. City leaders also have asked state lawmakers to look at minimum sentencing to allow judges flexibility to hand down sentences that fit the crime. Larson said the equity-focused priorities were introduced in response to council members designating improvements to equity in the community as one of their long-term goals. She said many new priorities directly stem from suggestions made by nonprofit organizations during the city's Black Lives Matter Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Work Session last summer. Organizations including the Fountain of Youth Program and Four Mounds Foundation contributed ideas on what legislative actions could be taken to improve equity. Councilmember Rick Jones said he and other council members are looking at all possible angles to address economic disparities for minority residents. Quote, "People of color are in worse fiscal shape in Dubuque, and we don't entirely have a grip on why," he said. "We want to have an enhanced push on meeting this problem, and this is one way we're doing that," unquote. Goodman said many of the priorities, including a minimum wage increase, would help many people get out of poverty. Quote, Iowa's minimum wage doesn't afford people the opportunity to pay rent, she said. We're trying to get people out of the poverty rat race, unquote. Some priorities look to specifically address housing needs, including support for legislation that fully funds federal housing choice vouchers based on community need. City documents state 5,300 families in Dubuque meet income requirements to be eligible for housing vouchers, but funding is only provided for about 900. Other priorities call for additional COVID-19 pandemic relief. The city supports the passage of the proposed American Rescue Plan, which would provide $350 billion in emergency relief for state and local governments. Councilmember Brad Kavanaugh said he fully supports the priorities aimed at improving equity, but he is unsure if federal lawmakers will pursue such reforms. Quote, "We haven't seen a whole lot of movement with this kind of legislation at the federal level in a long time, but I'm hopeful," Kavanaugh said. "I think the whole country is ready for these kinds of changes, and I hope it doesn't take too much longer," unquote. And the last story from the front page is Midwife Supplies Birthing Option. Program at Southwest Tech is the only one of its kind in the United States, by Bennett Goldstein. The dateline is Lancaster, Wisconsin. Gina Raitano's birthing center could pass for a cozy two-bedroom farmhouse if a visitor did not take the time to inspect the bookcases. A copy of Be Your Own Doctor sits on one shelf next to bottles of prenatal vitamins and deep tissue salve. Raitano, a certified professional midwife, seeks to integrate pregnancy into daily living, making it as unobtrusive as the baby scale that rests atop a whitewashed antique wardrobe. Quote, "The midwifery mode of care keeps pregnancy, labor, and delivery normal," she said. "It's not a medical condition. It's a natural condition," unquote. Raitano operates Tranquility Birth Services in rural Lancaster, where she tends to expectant mothers across southwest Wisconsin who desire a natural childbirth. Raitano's coverage area extends from rural Fenimore to Mazomani and as far south as Darlington. She works with 6 to 10 clients per month. Nearly all of her clients are Amish, a community that traditionally has shied away from modern medicine, but she perceives growing acceptance among the general public, too. Just 8% of births in the U.S. are attended by midwives, but their importance in providing maternal care recently was recognized by the World Health Organization. The agency, which declared 2020 the International Year of the Nurse and the Midwife, stated that interventions delivered by midwives could avert 80% of all stillbirths and maternal and neonatal deaths. Midwives are trained birth attendants who can monitor expectant mothers over the course of a pregnancy. They manage labor and delivery using non-invasive techniques and provide postpartum follow-up. Surgical interventions and pharmaceutical approaches to pain management are beyond their scope of practice, and they refer complicated pregnancies to physicians. Raitano trained at Southwest Wisconsin Technical College. The educational institution in Fenimore offers the only public direct entry midwifery program in the U.S. The program, which opened in 2008, is overseen by 4 instructors and 2 clinical site coordinators. Students complete about 1,500 training hours and attend to 55 births under a recognized preceptor. This year, enrollment grew from 77 to 117 students, which program leaders associate with the increasing recognition of midwifery's importance. Quote, "The need for our work, just like nurses, is really vital to our public health system all over the world," unquote, said Program Director Vanessa Caldari. The United States has the highest maternal mortality rate among developed nations, with 17.3 deaths per 100,000 live births, according to the latest data from the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The findings are attributed to a shortage of maternity care providers and inequitable access to primary care services, particularly among Native American and Black women, who experience mortality rates of 28.3 per 100,000 live births and 41.7 per 100,000, respectively. Program directors believe midwives can fill a critical vacuum in rural settings where more than 18 million people of reproductive age live. Research indicates that low-risk pregnancies attended by midwives are just as safe as those overseen by physicians in hospitals, but also are associated with fewer medical interventions like C-sections, which are costly and carry associated risks. The historian Charlotte Borst has investigated the supplantation of midwives by physicians in the birthing room, a process that began in the U.S. during the late 1800s. Societal preferences are shifting from traditional skills toward professionalized expertise grounded in science, a realm where physicians could tout their new wares. In antiseptic hospitals, obstetricians could reduce pregnancy's dangers and, with the advent of anesthesia, offer the promise of painless childbirth. Meanwhile, the medical profession barred midwives from practicing inside hospitals. Natural childbirth, which emerged in the 1970s, was an outgrowth of the feminist movement and was premised on rejecting the medicalization of women's bodies. Some midwives have proposed that the COVID-19 pandemic has given expectant mothers pause as they decide whether to deliver at home or inside a hospital where they might be subject to visitor restrictions. Cindy Larson, a dean at Southwest Tech, said midwives are not attempting to replace hospitals, but rather they provide mothers-to-be with another option. Raitano describes herself as a person who adopts a natural approach to everything. She previously worked at Whole Foods Market for 13 years. During that time, she trained as a certified homeopath, a practitioner of a type of alternative medicine, and a doula, which is a trained assistant who is not a medical professional, but provides support for expectant women. After graduating from Southwest Tech in 2014, Raitano joined her current practice, which she later inherited from the then owner. She serves as a preceptor for current students. Anita Mainville often accompanies Raitano while she visits clinics. A trained emergency medical technician, Mainville previously worked in a rural clinic located in the mountains surrounded Petit-Goave, Haiti. There, she attended deliveries and observed the importance of midwives. After she graduates, she hopes to return to Haiti and open a clinic with her husband, a physician. Manviel said having midwives attend her two pregnancies reinforced her admiration for the profession's emphasis on personalized care. Quote, every detail was important to them, unquote, she said. We turn to page 2. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Thursday's developments include the state of Iowa records 15 more deaths linked to the virus. As of 5 p.m. on Thursday, the local 14-day positivity rates in Iowa were 9.1% for Jackson County, 6.2% for Delaware County, 6.4% for Dubuque County, 5.7% for Jones County, and 3.6% for Clayton County. As of 5 p.m. Thursday, one area long-term care facility remained on the state's outbreak list. Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque had 3 new cases in the previous 14 days. The state did not provide new county-level hospitalization data on Thursday. The most recent data as of Monday afternoon showed 13 Dubuque County residents with COVID-19 were hospitalized, a decline of 1 since the previous update as of Saturday. There were 2 Clayton County residents hospitalized, an increase of 1. 1 from Jackson County, unchanged, 1 in Jones County, an increase of 1, and Delaware County continued to have no residents hospitalized. Statewide, Iowa reported 723 additional cases during the 24-hour span, increasing the state's total to 331,233 as of 5 p.m. Thursday. The state reported 15 additional deaths, so the toll moved to 5,321. Statewide, Wisconsin reported 733 additional cases Thursday, increasing the state's total to 557,722. The state reported 18 new related deaths, for a total of 6,232. The Dubuque County Board of Health will host a public hearing on an extension of the countywide mask mandate at 6 p.m. Wednesday, February 24th, via Zoom. Those interested in listening or speaking during the meeting should email comment@dubuquecounty.us to receive the Zoom link. The state of Illinois is offering a free temporary COVID-19 testing site from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday, February 21st at Joe Davies County Health Department, 9483 U.S. Route 20 West, Galena, Illinois. The state of Wisconsin announced Thursday that a new service will be launching March 1st to connect residents with available vaccines. The Wisconsin COVID-19 Vaccine Registry will provide information on when and where residents can be vaccinated and allow them to schedule an appointment. To obtain additional information, visit the dhs.wisconsin.gov/news/releases/021821.htm. A free COVID-19 testing site will be held today in Platteville at the National Guard Armory, 475 North Water Street, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. County officials encourage residents to pre-register at https://register.covidconnect.wi.gov. In Illinois, the state reported 1,966 additional cases Thursday, along with 72 deaths. That brings the state's total to 1,168,683 cases and 20,129 deaths. Area COVID cases as of Thursday by county and state. In Iowa, Clayton County has 1,587 cases. That's unchanged. 53 deaths. Recovered are 1,488 and 46 active cases. In Delaware County, 1,844 confirmed cases. That's up 5. 38 deaths. Recovered are 1,708. Active cases are 98. That's up 2. Dubuque County has 12,183 confirmed cases. That's up 25. Deaths are 190. Recovered 11,339. And active are 654, down 17. In Jackson County, 2,074, that's up 1, confirmed cases. Deaths are 37. Recovered are 1,913. And there are 124 active cases, and that's down 4. In Jones County, there are 2,833 confirmed cases. That's up 2. 54 deaths. Recovered are 2,684, and active cases are 95. That's down 4. In Illinois, Joe Davies County has confirmed 1,591 cases. That's up 2. Deaths are 24. Recovered are 1,534. And there are 33 active cases, and that's up 2. In Wisconsin, in Crawford County, 1,661 confirmed cases. That's up 1. There are 17 deaths. Recovered, not applicable, and active, NA also. In Grant County, confirmed cases are 4,638. That's up 5. There are 79 deaths. There are 4,487 recovered and 72 active cases. That is unchanged. In Iowa County, there are 1,840 confirmed cases. That's up 1. There are 9 deaths. There are 1,802 recovered and 29 active cases. That's down 2. And in Lafayette County, there are 1,433 confirmed cases. That's up 3. There are 7 deaths. There are 1,388 recovered, and there are 38 active cases, and that's up 3. COVID-19 vaccination data by county. In Iowa, in Clayton County, the first dose has been given to 1,645 people. That's up 81. That's 9.3% of the county is fully vaccinated. That's 777. That's up 12%. And that is 4.4% of the county. In Delaware County, the first dose has gone to 1,269 people. That's up 116. That is 7.4% of the county, and fully vaccinated are 755. That's up 55%, or 55 people, and the percent of the county fully vaccinated is 4.4%. In Dubuque County, the first dose has been given to 8,253 people. That is up 171 people. Percent, that's 8.4% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 4,868 people. That's up 317, and that represents 5% of the county. In Jackson County, 1,999 people have been vaccinated. That's up 215 people, and it represents 10.2% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 692 people, and that's up 52, and that represents 3.5% of the county. In Jones County, 1,668 people have been vaccinated. That's up 179 and represents 8% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 944 people, up 20, and that represents 4.5% of the county. In Illinois, Joe Davies County has vaccinated. The first dose has gone to 1,697 people. That's down 3, and I don't understand that. Percent of the county is 7.9%. Fully vaccinated are 573. That's up 9, and that represents 2.6% of the county. In Wisconsin, in Crawford County, 1,388 people have been vaccinated. That represents 8.6% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 872 people. That is up 194 and represents 5.4% of the county. In Grant County, Wisconsin, 5,739 people have been vaccinated. That represents 11.1% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 3,274, and that's up 689 people, which represents 6.4% of the county. In Iowa County, 3,180 people have been vaccinated. That's 13.4% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 1,364, and that went up 84 people, and that represents 5.8% of the county. And finally, in Lafayette County, 2,267 have received the first dose. That's 13.6% of the county. Fully vaccinated are 899, that's up 93, and that represents 5.4% of the county. You are listening to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Friday, February 19th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now we will turn to today's obituaries. Jacqueline S. Lang, Maquoketa, Iowa. Jacqueline S. Lang, 60, of Maquoketa, died on Wednesday, February 17, 2021, at Jackson County Regional Medical Center. A memorial visitation will be held on Monday, February 22nd, at Hockman-Meyer Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Bellevue. Complete arrangements are pending. Leonard Z. Martin, McGregor, Iowa. Leonard Z. Martin, 52, of McGregor, died on Tuesday, February 16, 2021, at his home. Services will be held at a later date. Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of McGregor is assisting the family. Peggy S. Demkier. Peggy S. Demkier, 66, of Dubuque, died on Wednesday, February 17, 2021. Visitation will be held from 1 to 5 p.m. Monday, February 22nd at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home, 3860 Asbury Road, where services will be held at 5 p.m. Donald C. Oliver, 92, of East Dubuque, died on Thursday, February 18, 2021. Complete arrangements are pending at the Miller Funeral Home in East Dubuque. Burial will be in the East Dubuque Cemetery. Funeral services. Most funeral homes and churches are practicing social distancing guidelines recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Contact specific locations for more information. Eugene F. Baxter, Dubuque. Visitation, 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, February 20th. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, Dubuque. Services, 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Jacob T. Blanchard, Dubuque. Mass of Christian Burial, 10 a.m. today. St. Anthony Catholic Church, Dubuque. Joseph M. Blassen, Sr., Dubuque. Visitation, 9:30 to 11 a.m. Saturday, February 20th, St. Columbkill Catholic Church, Dubuque. Services, 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Savannah R. Domeyer, Dubuque. Visitation, 3 to 7 p.m. today, Edgewood Event Center, Edgewood, Iowa. Service, 7 p.m. today at the Event Center. Louis G. Drossler, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Visitation, 9 a.m. to noon, Saturday, February 20th. St. Rose of Lima Catholic Church, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Services noon Saturday at the church. Philip J. Hamilton, Dubuque. Services 10 a.m. Saturday, February 20th, Arbor Oaks Bible Chapel, Dubuque. Frederick A. Kremer, Cascade, Iowa. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. today, St. Martin Catholic Church, Cascade. Anna L. Leffelholtz, Dubuque. Visitation 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, February 21st, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, Dubuque. Mass of Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Monday, February 22nd, Holy Ghost Church, Dubuque. Thomas J. Toner, Iowa City. Services 10:30 a.m. Saturday, February 20th, St. Patrick Catholic Church, Iowa City. Now we turn to the sports page and prep wrestling. The Iowa State Tournament and No Nerves Noonan. Cascade's number one grappler dominates in opening round by Tim O'Neill. Dateline Des Moines. State tournament week begins with a cascade of nerves. By the time Aiden Noonan steps on the mat for that first match, though, all of that has dissipated and it's time to get down to business. Cascade's two-time state champion was quick and to the point as he opened his final high school wrestling tournament. Noonan, ranked number one at 132 pounds, improved to 43-0 with a 64-second pin of Alburnett's Dylan Behrens in the first round of the Iowa Class 1A state tournament on Thursday at Wells Fargo Arena. Quote, "It's good to get out there and get going, get the week started right," unquote, said Noonan. Noonan, who has committed to wrestle at Wyoming next year, won his 130th consecutive match and will face Sioux Central's fourth-ranked Chris Ferguson in today's quarterfinals. But he's not feeling tense as he chases a third title. That initial surge of nerves always passes quickly. Quote, "I don't really feel the pressure at all when I get down there," Noonan said. "I feel it throughout the season, and then I get down here and I don't feel any pressure at all." Cascade's Trevor Freiberger, 120 pounds, went 0-2 in his state debut and was eliminated. Dyersville Beckman has had a strong postseason run so far. It continued with three of the Trailblazers, five qualifiers reaching the second day. Fourth-ranked Nick Hageman won a 4-0 decision over the 10th-ranked McCade Munn of Nashua Plainville in his 145-pound first-round match. He will wrestle New London's second-ranked Dominic Lopez in today's quarterfinal. Quote, "It's a different atmosphere," Hageman said. "I've got some hard ones coming up, but I'm excited," unquote. Owen Hunergarth, 195 pounds, dominated in his first-round match, countering multiple front headlock attempts from Alta Aurelia's Brandon Meyer en route to a 19-3 technical fall. He will face Lisbon's number 6-ranked Truman Krob today in the quarterfinals. It was a special moment for Hunergarth, who said he had 16 tickets for family members to watch him. he got an assist from his family, too. Quote, "My dad did some research, and that headlock was all he did, so I knew that was coming," unquote, Hunergarth said. The Trailblazers' Nick Schmidt, at 126, lost his opener but rallied in his consolation first-round match and advanced to the second day. Edgewood Kohlberg's number 6-ranked Dawson Bergen began his first state appearance, won an 11-5 decision over Colfax Mingo's number 7, Noah Strohmeyer, in his 113-pound first-round match. Motivated by a fourth-place finish at last year's district meet, Bergen will face Wapsie Valley's number 4, Dawson Schmidt, in today's quarterfinal. "I want to place. That's my goal," Bergen said. "I didn't even make it there last year. I want to place this year," unquote. Beckman's Nick Waffelkuhl at 182 and Jason Koopman at 285 and Cascade's Trevor Freiberger at 125 lost both their matches and were eliminated. In Class 2A, fresh off a third consecutive state dual championship, West Delaware used Thursday's opening Class 2A session to build a foundation for its run toward a second traditional team title in 3 seasons. The Hawks advanced 8 of their 11 qualifiers into the quarterfinals, with pins from number 7-ranked Logan Payton at 145, number 5, Jaden Payton at 152, number 1, Jared Voss at 170, number 4, Cale Meyer at 182, number 1, Wyatt Volker at 195, and Carson Petlin at 285, and led the team race 36-18 over second place Independence. Number 6, Carson Less at 113, and number 9, Riley Dolan at 132, also won decisions for the Hawks. Braden Morey at 106, and Blake Engel at 126, and Stavely Morey at 138, lost their openers, but all 3 rebounded in the consolation round to advance. And in more wrestling news, Nauman having fun, moving on. Bobcat is one of 4 area wrestlers to reach 3A state quarterfinals by Tim O'Neill. Dateline Des Moines. Sawyer Nauman's formula is simple. Have some fun and just do better than last year. So far, so good, but with more work yet to be done. Nauman opened his second state tournament with a pin of Iowa City Liberty's Vincenzo Lima in just 1:06 in their 195-pound first-round bout Thursday at the Iowa Class 3A State Wrestling Tournament at Wells Fargo Arena. Quote, "My goal is to get higher than 7th place," said Nauman, who placed 7th at the same weight a year ago. "Obviously, my goal is to have fun. That's why I hope everybody wrestles, to have fun. If I can get higher than 7th place this year, I'll consider it a successful season." Nauman improved to 31-3 and will face Waverly Shellrock's third-ranked Jake Walker in today's quarterfinal. Walker beat Nauman in last weekend's district final. No matter what happens, Nauman is definitely feeling more cozy at the Well this year. Despite all his success, last year marked his first season wrestling in more than half a decade. Quote, "A lot more comfortable. The smells, the sights, they all ring a bell again," he said. "It's good to be back here," unquote. Nauman was just one of 4 area wrestlers to reach the 3A quarterfinals. Teammate and 4th-ranked Evan Surface and Dubuque Hempstead's 3rd-ranked Chad Bellis and Josiah Schlatzel also won their openers. Surface won a 6-4 decision over Indianola's Jacob Darr at 182. Quote, "It felt good. It felt like I kicked some rust off and I'm ready to go," unquote, said Surface, who will face Waukee's 2nd-ranked Griffin Gamel in the quarterfinals. Bellis's introduction to the Iowa State tournament was a little bit wackier. He didn't score a single offensive or defensive point in his 120-pound opener, but still got the win when his opponent, West Des Moines Dowling's 10th-ranked Ethan Mahoney, was disqualified. Contact to Mahoney's lip caused his braces to cut the inside of his mouth. In the middle of blood time, the referee realized Mahoney wasn't wearing his mouth guard and awarded Bellis a point. In the meantime, a coach ran back to Dowling's locker room to fetch Mahoney's bag and returned to the mat just seconds after the allotted 5 minutes would have expired. Officials gave Mahoney a few moments to rummage through his bag, but when the search for his mouthguard came up empty, Bellis was declared the winner. Quote, "I got very prepared for this match," Bellis said. "It sucked that I didn't get to see how I felt, but I think I'll be even more prepared tomorrow," unquote. Bellis, a former Illinois state champion who transferred to Hempstead over the summer, will face Fort Dodge's fourth-ranked Lane Cowell in today's quarterfinals. Schatzel, who transferred to Hempstead from Crosstown Senior, won a 7-2 decision over Oskaloosa's Leland Evans in his 145-pound match. He will face third-ranked Drazon Phillips of Fort Dodge in today's quarterfinal. Quote, "Approach it the same as this one, maybe with a little less nerves since I got that first one out of the way," Schlatzel said. "Go out there, wrestle my heart out, win or lose, I'll still be happy to be here," unquote. The Mustangs' fifth-ranked Adler Kramer lost his rematch with Waverly Shellrock's Carter Fecht at 4-2 in the third round of 126, but rebounded with a dominant effort to reach the second day. Hempstead's Adam Ward at 220 and Western Dubuque's Grayson Gardner at 170 and Emerson Lux Morales at 285 also lost their first round matches but bounced back with wins in the consolation round to reach the second day. Western Dubuque's Dakota Lau lost both of his matches at 160 and was eliminated. In boys prep basketball, East Dubuque 70, Galena 50. Warriors cherish season. With no playoffs, East Dubuque Sabres sweep of rival Galena by Danny Miller. Dateline Galena. In this pandemic-shortened version of Illinois prep basketball, with no postseason to look forward to, a premium is placed on winning the rivalry games. For the second time this week, East Dubuque took down its nemesis from Galena in a 70-50 rout on Thursday night. Senior Declan Schemmel scored 18 of his game-high 26 points in the first half of the Warriors. And the Warriors were on fire from downtown, sinking 7 three-pointers to take 43-24 advantage at the break. Quote, "We came into this game and the last game with a chip on our shoulder," unquote, Schemmel said. "I think it's really starting to dawn on the seniors that this is our last season, and we are only getting half of it. We're trying to make the most of it and make it a good memory," unquote. Teams traded baskets early on in a tightly contested first quarter before East Dubuque went on a 9-2 run to take a 23-14 lead after 8 minutes of play. The Warriors started the second quarter on a 6-0 run to stretch their lead to 30-14. With 1:55 remaining in the half, Schemmel hit from long range and followed that up with the next drive with a short jumper. Cole Heller's tray with 31 seconds left gave the Warriors a commanding lead at halftime. Quote, "The whole year has been different," unquote, East Dubuque coach Eric Miller said. "I feel like when we play these short windows with the experience we have back from last year, it gives us a nice advantage. The start was important for us tonight. We're pretty good front runners. If we can get out in front with five guys who can handle the ball, we're pretty difficult to deal with," unquote. Galena seemed poised to make a second-half run as it scored the first 4 points of the third. Khalid Newton's steal and layup cut the deficit to 15 early in the third, but Galena could never close the gap any further. East Dubuque, at 6-0, went ahead by 21 on Schlemmel's two free throws with 6:10 remaining in the game, and his jumper on the next drive gave his team its biggest advantage of the night at 65-42. More than anything, Miller is simply happy his team has the opportunity to play basketball this season. Quote, "This is all we get, but these are the ones we remember," he said. "When they come back for their 10-year reunion, they will talk about that crazy year when they were seniors," unquote. In girls prep basketball, Mineral Point 63, Waterloo 60, WIAA Division 4 sectionals. Pointers advance to sectional final by Shannon Mum. Dateline Mineral Point, Wisconsin. Mineral Point junior Mallory Lindsay knew she was going to have to work her tail off to get any open shots against Waterloo in Thursday night's WIAA 4 sectional semifinal. The Pirates' Mandy Webster was attached to Lindsay at the hip, but the junior guard didn't let that stop her. She finished the game with a team-high 20 points as the fifth-ranked Pointers held off Waterloo 63-60. The Pointers, 15-5, advanced to Saturday's sectional final against SWAL rival Fenimore, who was a 48-44 winner over Kenosha St. Joe's. Quote, "We had our season end at the sectional semifinal the past 2 years, and we didn't want that to happen again," said Lindsay, who went 6-for-8 from three-point range. "It's been a crazy year, and we know any game could be our last, so that makes this win feel even better," unquote. The Pointers got off to a hot start using an early 15-0 run to take a commanding 17-2 lead. Quote, "We tried to get out and create some tempo early," Mineral Point coach Michael Keyes said. "Waterloo is loaded with athletes, and we knew they were going to make a run at us," unquote. The Pirates did just that, scoring 13 straight points to pull to within 2 at 17-15 while sending Lindsay to the bench with 2 early fouls. Waterloo closed the gap to 1 point but trailed 28-23 at the half. Quote, "Sitting on the bench is never fun, but I had confidence in my teammates to get the job done while I was out," unquote, Lindsay said. The Pirates were the ones taking control early in the second half, going on a 13-0 run to take a 38-31 lead on the Pointers before Lindsay ended the scoring drought with the tray at the 14-minute 15-second mark. Mineral Point reclaimed the lead on back-to-back threes from Lindsay, followed by a layup from fellow junior Ella Chambers, who finished the game with 17 points. Quote, "We knew they were guarding Mal pretty hard, but that's why it's a 5-on-5 game," Chambers said. "Us four knew we needed to step up and take charge offensively if Mal was being guarded like that," unquote. The two teams exchanged the lead 3 more times before Chambers knocked down a huge 3 with 1 minute and 20 seconds remaining to put the Pointers up 60-57. Quote, "Mal is a heck of a player, but that girl was on her like glue," Keyes said. "I thought Ella did a great job of hitting some really big shots for us, especially late in the game," unquote. A free throw from Macy Alishman gave the Pointers a 4-point cushion with 42 seconds remaining, but Waterloo's Julia Asik answered with a triple with 3 seconds remaining. A pair of free throws from Chambers helped secure the win for the Pointers. Quote, "It's that time where all you need to do is survive and advance," Keyes said. "I'm proud of our kids for their effort and for fighting until the end," unquote. And more from boys prep basketball. Dyersville, Beckman 58, Jessup 54 in overtime. Iowa Class 2A District Semifinal. Trailblazers survive Jessup by Tom Gregory. Dateline Dyersville, Iowa. Nothing's predetermined in tournament time, but Thursday's thrilling win just might have been decided in Dyersville Beckman Trailblazers collective DNA. Logan Gudkin gave Beckman a 1-point lead with a 3-pointer in the final minute of overtime, then iced the game with 2 free throws with 4 seconds left as the Blazers slipped past visiting Jessup, 58-54, in an Iowa Class 2A Substate 4-second round boys basketball matchup. Quote, "It's what I do. If I go to the line, I'm going to make the throws," Gudkin said. "My parents always told me I've got to make my free throws, so I make them," unquote. Patrick Gallagher scored 20 points to lead the Blazers, who move on in the playoffs with a 14-7 record and will meet Waukon on Tuesday in a district final at the West Delaware High School. Quote, "We've played so many close games lately, it's kind of like second nature to us," Gallagher said. "I wouldn't say I was getting nervous, but maybe a little," unquote. The Blazers' low-post tandem of Jacob Hermson and Jack Gelling muscled home all of Beckman's points in the first from close range with a pair of buckets each. Jessup padded its lead by taking a page out of Beckman's book in the second quarter. The Jayhawks knocked down the first 3 baskets of the second and led by as many as 7. Beckman called timeout to calm things, followed with a 9-0 run and reclaimed the lead on a 3 from Gallagher. Gallagher added another 3 with just over a minute left before halftime to break a 21-21 tie. Gallagher added two more trays and a block shot during a 14-3 run early in the third as Beckman stretched its lead to double digits. The Jayhawks finished the third on an 11-0 run to take a one-point lead heading into the final quarter. Hermsen scored 6 of his 18 points in the final 2 minutes of regulation, including a bucket with 14 seconds left to send the game to overtime. Jessup's Carson Lanau blocked 2 shots and made a go-ahead basket in the extra frame before Gudkin's heroic final minute. Quote, "We played a lot of close games, but we play with a lot of poise down the stretch, and that's what you saw tonight," Beckman coach Michael Maloney said. "I expected a tough game from Jessup, but our guys really responded," unquote. And to the local and area roundup, Baumhover's reverse in final seconds lifts the Bobcats. Garrett Baumhover's reverse layup off an inbounds pass with 9 seconds remaining lifted the Western Dubuque boys basketball team to a 58-57 victory over Iowa City West in its regular season finale on Thursday night in Epworth, Iowa. Baumhover led the Class 3A number 8 ranked Bobcats with 19 points. Dylan Johnson added 14. Dubuque senior 75, Iowa City High 43. At Iowa City, Kane McWilliams scored 14 points. Kendrick Watkins-Hogue added 11, and Sam Atkins and Jim Boniface had 9 apiece as the Rams closed the regular season with 6 straight wins. Dubuque Hempstead 66, Iowa City Liberty 46 at Iowa City. Michael Duax scored 24 points, and Kellen Strohmeyer added 20 as the Class 4A number 6 ranked Mustangs blew past the Lightning. Cedar Rapids Xavier 64, Dubuque Wallert 56 at Wallert. Carson Kummer netted 14 points as the Golden Eagles dropped a tight game to the Saints. Edgewood Colesburg 72, Turkey Valley 52 at Edgewood, Iowa. The Vikings used a 40-27 run in the second half to pull away in their Class 1A district semifinal. Edco advanced to Tuesday's district final to face South Winneshiek, which upset defending state champ Wapsie Valley. Scales Mound 65, River Ridge 38 at Hanover, Illinois. Benjamin Vandigo scored 19 points as the Hornets cruised past the Wildcats. Stockton 55, West Carroll 27 at Stockton, Illinois. Ian Brochus dropped 19 points and the Blackhawks topped West Carroll. Warren 62, Duran 37 at Warren, Illinois. Mason Neff scored 13 points as the Warriors routed Durand. In girls basketball, Fenimore 48, Kenosha St. Joseph 44 at Fenimore, Wisconsin. The Golden Eagles won their 13th straight game in a WIAA Division IV sectional semifinal and advanced to Saturday's sectional final to meet SWAL rival Mineral Point. Lake Mills 57, Prairie du Chien 56 at Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Lily Cron scored 16 points, but the Blackhawks were nipped in their WIAA Division III sectional semifinal to close their season. In men's basketball, Loras 84, Wartburg 80 at Loras. The Dewhawks held off the Knights behind Rowan McGowan's 25 points. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Friday, February 19th, 2021. I'm your reader, Catherine Moyers. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date.
What exactly is fossil water, and why have we consumed so much of it? No, it's not a new brand of bottled water imported from the days of dinosaurs. Fossil water came from melting ice sheets, ancient lake systems, and a generally wetter climate tens to hundreds of thousands of years ago. It percolated into porous rocks, which were then buried under deep layers of sediment, where it was sealed off from the surface, and there it stayed, until farmers discovered it. And in the second half of the 20th century, they started drilling wells into fossil aquifers and pumping like mad, turning sunny, dry places into acres and acres of green farmland. Crop supplies boomed, food became cheaper and more plentiful, grown in formerly parched places like California and Kansas, and shipped around the world for people like you and me to eat, ingesting fossil water with it. The trouble is, fossil water is a finite resource, and new studies suggest that many fossil aquifers may become depleted this century, so that we won't be able to rely on them any longer. This could mean that the crops that depend on them could become less plentiful and more expensive again. All the while, population will likely increase, the climate will likely warm, our demand for water will continue to climb, which means we'll have to adapt to the lack of fossil water, just as we adapted to its discovery, this time with more efficient crops and farming methods and more efficient use. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.